Pledge of Allegiance salute. Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Such enthusiasm.
The mayor is in Whistler, so you're stuck with me.
Let's go.
I think we'll start with the roll call.
All righty. Council members are
here.
Council member Hansen.
Here.
Council member Taylor.
Here.
Council member Watson.
I'm present.
Council member Goodrich.
Here.
And Mayor Pro Tem Olson.
Here. And Carol has asked for excuse absence.
So moved.
Second.
So moved to second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
So be it. Next is public comment. Anyone have anything they'd like to speak about for 3 minutes? Come on up, join us. Name and address for the record, please.
Good evening, Council. My name is Yvonne Goldsmith. I live at 5840 Church Road, right here in Ferndale. And earlier today I sent you a packet of some information regarding the cell phone bill. And when John furnished some documentation, but I couldn't figure out what was the cost that he was paying until I got to the very last page of the documents that he sent in. And so I based my argument, if you want to call it that, on the $36 and some odd cents a month. 43 cents a month is what he pays for the plan of the family cell phone. And that's just based on that last page. It says breakdown of shared usage, da-da-da-da-da. And that's how I came to the figure I came to. So if we're paying $75 a month for cell phone usage and he's only using $36.34, if that's what his plan is prorated at, then he's making an extra $38.57 a month at our expense, taxpayers' expense, and therefore he gets an extra $462.84 a year if he times it out twice. And so that's how I based my figures on. I based them on John's documents that were sent on to me at the request of a public information request, and I'm just asking you to take a good look at it. I mean, I have several others. This is a whole stack of documents that I've gotten since January on expenses that I'm still questioning. I guess that's all I have to say. I think we have to be very careful with taxpayer dollars. I do on other issues with this. I have a problem with us paying for mileage, coming down the hill, going to work, coming back up the hill, or going to events where the city really isn't involved. There isn't a reason other than it's a socializing event opportunity, which is really good at re-election time, which I know is 3.5 years away, or 4 months. So that's it. That's all I have to say. And I'd be happy to take any questions, but that's how I based my figures off of the information that was submitted to me.
Does our esteemed acting treasurer have anything he wants to share?
A couple things. One is, and don't know if it makes a huge difference, my understanding is that the mayor had mentioned that on his phone bill, his usage and his wife's usage are inverted according to the company. So at least on the one bill that I did see, I think it was $60 instead of $40, $30. Again, it may not make a difference, but I understand that that is the case.
Right.
Context-wise, right now the mayor has a $75 payment, as does our community development director, and when Sam Taylor was here, he also got $75. The theory being, and this is what we talked about back before the mayor actually took office, back when Yori and Sam were the ones getting the $75, is that it ends up being cheaper to simply have the $75 payment than it would be for the city to buy the phone and then pay for usage each month. It also alleviates the, and whether this is persuasive or not, the need to carry two cell phones. But be that as it may, that's kind of the context behind it of how it came about. It came about 2 years ago, 3 years ago maybe. We've done it for a fair amount of time. And it, mostly it was because of really, it ended up being not only a convenience to the employee at that point, the department heads, but it also actually ended up being cheaper than it would be if we, conversely, the city usually buys phones for department heads and then pays for that plan.
I have Verizon, and I don't know what that, obviously that's what he told you, but the phone number with his name is his phone number. It's not his wife's phone.
Right.
This phone number is the one he's always had, and the one that I have had in my phone for years.
Right, so he just ported over that number.
I would assume that's what he did, but... So I don't know where the $66 month charge is his, because that's not his phone number.
Right.
And it's actually blocked out. So all those numbers were blocked out. So that argument isn't really going to hold water.
Yeah, again, I don't know if the numbers...
I just saw
that one bill. But yeah.
Maybe we could get to the bottom of that
and
give her what she's asking for, because this appears to do it. But the explanation isn't adding up.
Yeah, and we could find out, too, just what, given who our phone vendor is, so to speak, what it would cost the city to buy a phone through the city itself, and then how much that plan would cost. Again, I'm the last person to talk to about phones, because I don't have a phone that does anything except make a phone call. It's sad but true.
It
has to do, I think, with the white hair and what have you. But I'm not a Luddite, but at least I play one on TV.
Of course, I am just filling in for tonight. But I would highly suggest looking at that, because you guys that carry city phones, if they ever need to, for lawsuits, look at your phone.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking at everything in your phone.
Yeah, that's something I know. We did have that conversation back. Again, 2-3 years ago, probably, about the fact that it is discoverable.
That could be, yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I had a government phone, and I don't want anybody in my business.
Yeah, and we'll spend a little bit of time in finding out what the opportunity cost would be if we actually went the other direction.
Right. So would it be fair to say that the $75 is kind of a flat rate?
Exactly.
Meant to compensate employees for the use of their own personal phone.
That's right, yeah. It's $75 every month, regardless of the usage.
So the $75 is not based on the cost of the plan or the carrier or anything like that?
Not that I'm aware. My understanding is that the $75 for Sam, it's $75 for Yuri, it's $75 for the mayor. That's remained unchanged.
Okay.
On that, I'm going to come back with you on that, okay? When I served on the council, the fire department always came to us, and every time they came to us, it was always 3%. And it was 3% because it had always been 3%, and that's what I'm hearing. It's $75 because it's always been $75. So my story back to Chief Russell was, okay, I used to bake a ham because that's the only thing I knew how to make. Okay, when I baked the ham, I cut the ends off of each end of the ham.
You know why?
And you know, I bet you do. And I never understood why they did that. And finally, one time I asked my grandma, why do we cut the ends of the ham? And she said to me, because it didn't fit in my pan.
Mm-hmm.
But we always did it because that's how we were taught. And I think that's wrong. I think we really need to be careful with our money, and that's it.
Yeah,
anybody
else? Yeah, again, the decision was made a few years ago. We'll price the plans today and see if that's
And John's number is John's number,
out.
The 1-881.
Right.
I know, because I've had calls from him informing me that this is your mayor, John Mutchler, and this is my personal cell phone, da-da-da-da-da, 1-881. You're more than welcome to call me. So I know that's his number. Okay, and any phone company today will transfer that number into a different phone system.
Yeah, you can keep your number. Well, we'll check on that.
Thank you. Anyone else for public comment? Seeing none.
Papa John doesn't love you, apparently.
I'm not saying you might have got a heads up who's sitting here today. I have before you a consent agenda.
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and approved. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I'm sorry. Is that Councilmember Taylor?
Taylor, second.
You guys sound so much alike.
Next.
You're welcome.
And, nays, which none. There's 6-0 places. Okay. Moving on. Presentation by Pinky Vargas. Hello, welcome.
Good evening, Council, staff. My name is Casey Vargas. I'm from Puget Sound Energy, and I'm here tonight just to follow up on a little partnership we did with your city and doing some outreach on energy efficiency. And we did a door-to-door campaign here in Ferndale from July 19th to 22nd, and we knocked on 1,112 doors here in Ferndale. 417 people answered, but only 361 talked to us. And out of that, we had, as a matter, a percentage rate of 51% sign up for the free home energy assessment. And again, this is an energy assessment. They give them 20 free LEDs and show them things that they can do for their house. So it is a free program, and all we were doing is asking people to sign up and make scheduled appointments and come back at another time. So in total, we have 185 people that signed up for a home energy and assessment in Ferndale, and that is a significant amount of energy savings. And if I can, I would like to come back in about 6 months, tell you how many assessments we did in total and how much energy we saved. So I just wanted to thank the City of Ferndale for being willing to do a partnership with us on energy efficiency and have an opportunity to talk to your residents. So thank you, and way to go, Ferndale. Any questions on anything?
Is this going to be something, usually we found that once the word gets out and then they hear about it and then it's, you know, it's a good deal, there's people want to try it again. Is that something that you're...
Well, every PSC customer is eligible for the home energy assessment. So if a neighbor wasn't home, we left a door hanger, but they talked to their other neighbor and said, hey, I'm going to do this thing, we are eligible for anybody.
Oh,
so
okay.
Anyone can call at any time. This is a free program to all of our customers.
Right. And now that we have the numbers, we might do some publicity about it, too.
And I'll give you a copy of the stats if you'd like those, Riley.
Yeah, because I was wondering, you said you knocked on over 1,000 doors and you got over 100 people to actually 10%. How does that stack up with others?
It's actually really significant.
Really? Okay.
I will tell you that on average it's about 30%. So for us to get 51% of people that said, yeah, this sounds like a great idea, and part of that is actually looking at the neighborhoods and showing what homes are going to qualify and kind of targeting those neighborhoods when we did the door knocking, because it's, you know, somebody's got a brand new home, probably isn't going to be requiring an energy assessment. So that's part of the targeting. And often the 20 free LEDs is something that everybody needs no matter what. So I want to say that, you know, it's usually 30%, but 51% in Ferndale is pretty awesome.
Good. Thank you. Any questions?
Has City Hall done it? Do we have LEDs in City Hall?
So I will tell you that we've had conversations about looking at all of the city municipal buildings, and I think that's kind of in process to figure out how we're going to move forward on that.
We do not have a lot of LEDs at City Hall.
Okay.
Right. I think it was a few years back, maybe more than that, we actually, I think, replaced all our ballast with some other kind of load.
You did.
But
from T12s, I think,
right,
to T8s and 5s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the LED is something that,
It does add up. We did it at home, and you actually do notice a difference in your electric bill. We wouldn't think we would, but we did.
Well, we don't want any dim bulbs at City Hall.
And I think that you'll find that your light quality makes a significant difference in your work environment as well. So we're open, and we have explored a couple programs for the city to use and move forward when you guys are ready. We realize that's always budgets, et cetera, that, you know, it takes a time to move forward.
I just have a question. I know at ACE, because I work there occasionally, that PSE gives discounts on some LED bulbs, but not on all of them. Is there any reason why, or is it specifically? We'll have people come in and say, this is the type of bulb I want, but it doesn't qualify or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's two factors. One of them is that we can only rebate bulbs that are Energy Star certified. So there's a certain prerequisite, and there are actually a lot of bulbs out there that are not ENERGY STAR certified, and that way we know the guarantee that we're saying so many life hours is actually legitimate when we're doing that for our customers. So that's one part of it. And then the second part is that we are also able sometimes to negotiate with certain vendors to be able to give a discount on the bulbs. So sometimes we can do multiple, sometimes we just get a special and we're able to promote something. So it, both of those are part of the factors.
Brent kind of jogged a thought. When we're in Costco, we see that you're subsidizing bulbs there.
Yep.
A lot of those go north. Are they aware that they're subsidized bulbs by PSE are headed to Canada?
So that's a great question. And yes, we do know that that happens. We also know that people who don't live in PSE territory in electrical, like in Snohomish County, also go to Skagit County to buy bulbs. And so there's actually, we consider the amount of energy savings that actually happens because people install LED bulbs for it to be worth it for us regardless. We know there's a little crossover. There's not much we can do about it. You know, we could... It's hard to ask your vendors to say, can you make sure that people bring their PSE electrical bill to Costco? Because your chances are probably pretty slim that's going to happen. So, yes, we recognize it is a concern, but it's still worth it because we know enough of those bulbs actually go into homes that are in PSE territory.
Okay. Well, thank you. Anybody else?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for coming.
Capital projects update.
Good evening, Council. My name's Katie. I'm the capital, I guess I'm the project manager for Public Works. Anyway, just a couple things to update you with. We'll start off with Washington Street. Get the kind of bad news out of the way, I guess. Yeah, this is more of the same. So basically up to this point, we've addressed the unanticipated water and sewer work that I told you a little bit about the last time I was up here. In the last little bit, they've completed some road excavation. We've got a major water tie-in scheduled for tomorrow. There's six pretty significantly sized water mains that they've got to get connected in. And so we sent out water notices, shut-off notices on Friday, and the water will be off from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. That was sent out to about 117 residents, so it's pretty significant. After that work's done, we've got the storm system ready to be installed. If you remember, basically the first time they put the bucket in the ground, they hit that mess there when they were trying to put in the storm initially. So we've got that scheduled. Puget Sound Energy is going to help the crews out by holding a pole at the corner of Golden Eagle Drive and Washington Street, and that'll be on Wednesday. So once that's all in, we've got curb gutter, sidewalk, paving to do. As I alluded to last time we talked, we were behind schedule because of the unexpected utility work, and we're about 3 weeks behind. Initially, we had this set up so we would get the work done in time to open the road and be good prior to school starting, and it doesn't look like, unless we take severe action where we would, you know, try to get crews in on Saturday, Sunday, the city would have to partner with that as far as payment goes, that that's going to occur. So we have been in discussions with Ferndale School District. They've got a meeting set up on Wednesday to talk to the gal that runs the buses and Mark Bebach as well. So we're doing what we need to do to communicate that with the school district. So I don't know if anybody has any questions.
Councilmember Goodrich?
I was at the fire district meeting Thursday. And Chief Russell gave his report to their commissioners about the project and the delay and things. But then also it came up about the curb that's going in there for the crosswalk area. And there, I got really kind of hammered at it. You know, why are we putting in this curb? They are very concerned about it for two reasons. One is their apparatus hitting it. And if their apparatus hits it, is it will it break? And or will it break their apparatus? Fire truck will probably not break, but an ambulance might if it hits it. Chief Russell stated in all the years that he's been there, there has not been one pedestrian incident at that crosswalk with the way it's configured today. They cannot see why we are putting in that curb. I was thinking about it myself, and I was after the meeting, and I was looking at it as, hey, we're putting in this beautiful sidewalk with a nice little dip in it for the thing, and a 15-foot, 6-inch high curb. Does that sound like a new skate park for our high school kids, you know, to use that curb for skateboarding and things to and from school? If I was a kid and saw that, I mean, we had issues at the library when that was, you know, put in and some other things around. We're taking away the skateboard park there at the pump station by the railroad tracks. That was a concern that I thought of. And so what Chief Russell presented at to the commissioners was that there is no legal requirement for that curb to be put in there. It's just something that somebody has wanted to put in for possible additional safety issue. And he was very frustrated. The commissioners were very frustrated with why are we putting in this 15 feet of curb. I'm sharing that here tonight and to find out why we are doing this again and if there's any way we can do this to make the fire district happy. They're our partners now. I respect Chief Russell, and if Chief Russell, to me, is very concerned about this, then I think it's something that we really need to take a serious look at. Just the same way if Chief Knapp was coming in with a concern for our police department, I would look at it the same way.
Can you show the rest of us where? I'm not sure.
I'm not clear what we're talking about.
Yeah, I'm not
okay,
sure. And this is very cool.
How do I do that?
Yeah, the pointer will.
So,
laser pointer.
As we look at Washington Street, we have a crosswalk that goes across Washington Street, and I can. The crosswalk goes out and goes into the fire department's parking lot. The stretch currently is. There's no separation between the street, the sidewalk, or any of the parts along the front of the fire department. When the project was put together, you know, one of the major components of this is that it's a pedestrian safety project. Mm-hmm. There's a separation, or the intent is to get a separation between the parking area and the sidewalk and the crosswalk coming across. So you can see where the crosswalk goes across, has the ADA ramp, across the back of where the ADA ramp is, and it's roughly in the same location under the new plan. There's going to be a 6-inch high curb across the back to provide a separation from that parking area to the crosswalk and the crosswalk and sidewalk. It's intended to keep people from running over it. We worked with the fire department and modified the access to the fire department. We've done auto turn analysis utilizing the apparatus that they operate out of there and had discussions with them about the impacts to their operation. I do not believe that it's going to impede their utilization of the site. The one impact that they were discussing as being the major concern was that apparatus that were returning to the station were going to be impacted, but their turning radius coming into the facility. Like I said, we spent a significant amount. I think that you kind of identified the cost associated with that. We've spent upwards of $4,000 discussing the access requirements at this site and the curb. So I think that we've done our due diligence and gone out of our way to look at the impacts, modify the design of the project to minimize the impacts of it, and essentially are looking to do a project that provides for those pedestrian safety improvements along that corridor. So I don't know if there's anything else you want to add to it.
Yeah, to be specific, we've been talking to Chief Russell for months and months and months. If I had to guess, probably since April about that. And as Kevin mentioned, we did address the driveway cut to address the turning radius of the largest apparatus that they have, which is the ladder truck. You know, one point to make, or I guess, is while you know, I don't think anybody wants to question the ability of, you know, trained fire personnel and their driving abilities. That is a public place, and part of the protection for, you know, pedestrians who basically have their back to that open area is from, you know, cars that may be backing up from the parking spaces as well. And to say that there's no specific, you know, law per se, I mean, it's true that you can't, you know, look up a code in the RCW or the WAC or Ferndale Municipal Code, but there are design standards that our design engineers follow in order to basically ensure that what they're designing is acceptable for the location and the use and future use. And so there are different codes and standards, and, you know, one of those is that parking areas such as parking lots and driveways and that sort of thing, or, you know, areas where cars and pedestrians can intersect are protected. And one way to do that is to basically install a 6-inch curb. So is
the issue more not so much the big bay doors getting in and out, it's the angle parking over on the left? Is that the issue, those cars backing?
Both, really?
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, the intent would be to provide pedestrian safety from cars that are utilizing either those angled parking steps or coming out. But, I mean, nobody is suggesting that, you know, it's the fire district personnel themselves or apparatus leaving or returning that are the danger to the pedestrians. I mean, they're well-trained drivers. They're, you know, experienced with what they do, but the potential, I mean, you have a public parking lot there, you have the potential for anybody to come in and utilize the public parking lot and then back out and pull forward, and the intent is to provide that separation from the parking area to the pedestrian walkway. And like I said, we've worked together and worked with the design engineers and modifications of the entrance, the layout, the widths of the driveway cuts and everything to you know, be able to incorporate that necessary pedestrian safety improvement to the area with the, you know, taking into consideration the district's needs for getting their apparatus in and out. And it's been my understanding throughout that discussion that it's not a question of whether they're able to get out of the station to respond to an emergency, that the concern that I've heard expressed was that the returning apparatus would be running over it. So these are, you know, at the time.
Well,
where
like I said, I don't. Their concern is the apparatus hitting it. If it gets damaged, who's going to be responsible for, you know, fixing it? They would assume they are. But the issue also is why would we want to? In my feeling, is Chief Russell, very experienced gentleman. He is very concerned about this curb, and he is frustrated with the city about it, and I value the man's opinion. And if the curb doesn't need to be there, you're not going to stop everything, even with a 6-inch curb. How many times do we see on the news people that drive through the front of stores, and they have to go up and over curbs and in the things, and they end up with their car in the front of the store? I just think it's in the spirit of cooperation and stuff with the fire district that we eliminate the curb.
Do we have a crosswalk there now?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And is that another one to the east of it?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a new one.
No. That's existing, I believe.
That's there
existing.
Now. Yeah. Well,
it was there before we tore it up.
Yeah.
We had two in there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess I've never seen it used. I always see the truck driver just jaywalking across the street into the trailer. Okay. Kathy?
I guess I understand Chief Russell's concern. My concern from a city viewpoint is we got a grant to improve pedestrian safety. And so there are certain rules we have to follow for pedestrian safety, and I don't want to risk that grant. I understand he's not necessarily happy, but...
But it's not a requirement. It's a little nicety.
I don't know.
I disagree with that statement.
I think there's a design standard that has been put in place.
How about if I do this? How about make a motion that we suspend putting in the curb for the fire station, and at the next Public Works and Utility Committee meeting, we have Chief Russell and or a commissioner attend, and we discuss this so that Chief Russell has an actual voice in this discussion, seeing he is not here tonight.
I'll second that one.
Are we to the point of we're going to do that thing in the next 2 weeks?
I wish.
Well, that's kind of what I was thinking from what you said. So is there any danger of that getting built before next Wednesday?
No.
Do you have something?
It'd be the 31st before next
Wednesday. Oh.
I guess I would caution modifying the design. I've been involved in some of these discussions, and we have gone, I believe, out of our way to assuage their concerns. Right now they have, you know, unfettered pretty much access along their entire frontage, and I think that might be more of the issue than anything else. They are going to end up with theoretically less than what they have. Not that it is by any way would restrict their abilities to perform their job. I think our consultants have gone above and beyond to address their concerns. We do have a Safe Routes to School grant, and I can only imagine how many kids walk by there. I think we would want to do everything possible to ensure the safety of the kids while simultaneously allowing emergency access. And I think we've done that. But it's, again, this is up to you. We could end up having, you know, dueling experts, if you will. We'll probably have our designers there saying why the standards say this curb will protect children, and the chief will be there expressing his opinion. It's up to you, but I know this topic has been discussed extensively with the fire district. Anyway, it's up to you, but these type of changes at the last minute can tend to be troublesome. We already have a project that's over schedule, and this change will not come at a zero cost.
Well, I can see.
You got
Greg. Yes.
Right.
Katie, can you, about how long would the driveway cut be for the engine side of that? Do you know, roughly?
On the east side?
Yes.
Right side, the big driveway cut?
Yes.
Okay, so we're going from one unfettered access to two driveway cuts. I don't know the length specifically. I didn't bring my plans with me. But basically, if you line up the the wider portion of the building, you see where the administrative offices
yep.
are off
mm-hmm.
to the left.
Yep.
Basically, from that edge to the right, Rory. Right? From that edge, yeah, basically
straight
where that
down.
Concrete is straight out.
Okay.
So that's a complete
so
curve
basically
from there to the
right. at the crosswalk.
Yes.
So they're getting a good, what, 30 feet?
It's more than that.
More than 30 feet.
Yeah.
And then a normal driveway cut just to the side of that, correct? So there'll be the crosswalk and then there'll be
the wider than the normal driveway cut.
The one that would be, as we're looking at it to the left, the actual
right.
driveway where the cars
yeah,
are
the
out.
Secondary driveway,
this,
yeah.
so
to speak.
This
yeah.
driveway cut is larger than a standard driveway cut.
Okay.
And I do want to just reiterate one point in that I went over and I sat down with the chief the other day and spent quite a while sitting in his office discussing this issue. And at no point did I hear the viewpoint that we were, you know, impeding their access from a emergency standpoint, that, you know, when the doors open up and they need to respond to a fire, that we're not impeding their access to respond to a fire. The concept was is that we were hindering their access for an apparatus returning from a fire to get into the parking lot, not to get out of the parking lot. So it's never been framed to me that there's any emergency access issue.
Because I'm assuming they normally like back in so they could just charge
sure.
out. So what you're talking about is when they return, they have to do kind of a 3-point turn.
They
so again,
into
back
the site,
into
turn around, and then back into the bay because they don't have straight through access with it. you know, with the one apparatus that they were saying was problematic was the ladder truck that they operate. It's the largest apparatus that they have. We're actually increasing the distance from the front of the building out to the sidewalk because the sidewalk's moving a little bit further into the road. So the actual parking area at the fire station is getting larger with this project. Like I said, our engineers performed the auto turn analysis, which is a swept path analysis where they take the specific wheelbase and configuration of that vehicle and then superimpose it over the parking area so that they can see where the wheel tracks actually go within the parking area. And it fits in the space that's been allocated for it, and they have the ability to get the apparatus into and out of the facility without impacting that curb. So, I mean, you can kind of think of the curb as the center of a roundabout. We're not driving over the planting that's in the middle of the roundabout. We're circumnavigating the roundabout exactly as the curb is in the middle of the parking area. We're not driving over the curb. We're circumnavigating the curb. So I think that we've done a good job of balancing that public safety versus access, and I don't think that it's going to end up being an issue for the station.
I had one thought, and that's why I was going to wait and do this at the meeting instead of doing the designing things here or whatever. I went to the Linden Fair today, and they have a parking lot. Let's say the fire station was a parking lot with this middle-of-the-road crosswalk just like that. And what they did is they put two bollards right there at the crosswalk. So if a car came from the parking lot through, it couldn't get to the sidewalk. So instead of the 15 feet of curb, could you put two bollards there and give them more space that they're concerned about and still do your protection of the crosswalk?
I believe I brought that up with the chief.
I don't know. I've never talked about that with the chief either.
I don't think he was very positive about that either.
I got the impression that he likes what he has and likes to keep it.
That's not what came out of the fire district meeting. Just the opposite.
Yeah.
He's very frustrated with it, and the commissioners are frustrated with it.
I'd like to call for the question. We do have a motion on the floor.
There you go. We do. And if it's not going to cost us anything, I'll probably be voting for this because I don't see the problem sitting down and talking one more time before anything gets done with our people, and that's not going to cost us anything.
We probably will need to have our design engineers there just because it probably does talk about the technical aspects of it.
Well, the thing is that when you hire a licensed civil engineer in the state of Washington to design a project, they take on a lot of liability. So basically they're saying by putting their state stamp on it, and I'm not a licensed engineer, so I might be over-speaking myself just a tad bit here, but when they put their stamp on something, they're basically saying this meets a standard, and I am assuming a responsibility. And so to change that, you know, is kind of a big deal because there has been a lot, especially in this, you know, particular instance, there has been a lot of thought and a bunch of research and time and effort spent on it. So, you know, there it's more than just kind of a design thing like, well, that's my opinion. There's liability that goes along with that affects the city.
I'm really uncomfortable with council asking staff to modify a contract for a road this late in the process. And I understand that maybe we'll just have a conversation, nothing will come from it, but even if the majority of council wants the engineers to go stick a curb there, I'm really uncomfortable with this. This was designed months ago. We were already building it. Council should not be telling the engineers that they need to stick a curb somewhere. And I understand that the chief wants it there, but
he does not want it.
He doesn't want it there. But I don't want to set the precedent that council, you know, we're like 6 weeks away from finishing this project and we're going to start making redesigns because someone's unhappy.
And I would add to that, you know, first 3 weeks of school are going to be a nightmare. And if we do this, we're probably adding two or three more weeks.
We have no idea how much.
We have no idea.
then you know, that falls on us.
Yeah, if we decide. I don't know in this particular case, we could certainly find out, but sometimes you would think that when you don't have a contractor do something, it costs you less. But many times to not have them do something, it costs more because they still have to do something, and they're going to be waiting for that something to be, they're going to wait for a drawing to come up there. So this is not without cost to the city because we're going to need to do something there. And as you mentioned, the project is already behind. But again, this is something we could have our engineers there. They could go through the standards to talk about why we came up with what we came up with, and then why we modified it to actually theoretically do what we hope to do. But it's certainly something we could do.
Just counting votes in my head here, I don't think you have enough to make it, but I would still like to see somebody talk one-on-one with the chief. I don't think that's just too much to ask.
That could happen again, because it's happened in the past.
We can vote and see where we are.
We can do it again.
Like I said, I was over at the fire department, I don't know if it was last week.
Mm-hmm.
And I went over and I sat down in Chief Russell's office and had a lengthy conversation about this curve. So, I feel his frustration, but the project was designed to have the best benefit for the community as a whole, taking into consideration that we are putting together a project to increase pedestrian safety. It seems, you know, as a poor decision for us to go against the intent of the project.
Yeah. And I talked with the chief. It was a related. He actually came to my office for a related issue, but we did chat briefly about this. And I have to believe that, I can't believe that we would want to do something that would diminish the fire district's ability to do what they want to do. Again, I think that, at least from what I heard the other day, that it's a change from what they had. And in his mind, it's a diminishment of what they had.
Well, we have a call for the question. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And nays?
Nay.
Aye.
You are not. So three.
And you, as the acting mayor, get to make the decision.
No, I don't. When I'm pro tem, I don't give up my vote, so we're still three. And
that's
three.
What I mean. And so, but you have to break the tie.
You can't break the tie.
We can't break the tie?
I don't think I can because can I voted.
Right.
I don't get two bites at the apple.
Oh, okay. We should do this
because it's a high. We could always do
this. So, of course, the question is, what happens?
So is this like a soccer game? We decide every 20 minutes for nothing.
So if it's a tie, it fails.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So, but could I please have the names of who voted aye? I didn't get very well. I heard Goodrich, Brent, and Taylor. Thank you.
Brent,
Goodrich, Taylor, Ari, Olson.
Brent, Teresa, and myself.
Okay, thank you.
Here's just because we sit next to you.
But we will reach out to the chief again. This
Thanks.
Is not something we're just going
to... definitely talk to him again.
Yeah. I've got a phone call into him to talk to him about a different topic tomorrow, so I'll...
And don't I'll say that firefighters are good drivers. I was a firefighter, and one of our better engineers drove out of the station without the door being all the way up. So... Just because they're a thing doesn't necessarily mean that they're always the best drivers, especially at 2 o'clock in the morning.
I think we have a common purpose. I mean, we want to ensure public safety. That is both pedestrian safety as well as the fire district's ability to ingress and egress.
Something else that they're thinking about is what are we going to do about our skateboarders then? Because we are going to create a nice skateboard park for them.
Well, it's all right.
Seems like a win-win.
Sounds like a win.
And they're right by the paramedics.
Exactly. They'll be right next to
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So next on the list is Central City Water. They are within schedule. Their approach has changed a little bit to installing the utilities. They're working real hard on finishing up the main line. And then, so basically what they've done is they've finished up Hilltop, Crestline. They've installed the main line on Heights and Fieldview. They were pouring thrust blocks on Fieldview today. The Crestline main has been tested. Heights, the main line is still being tested. They're having an issue getting pressure to work out. We're not sure if there's some error in the line or what, but they're going to get that sorted out in the next couple of days. Again, Fieldview is in. They anticipate starting to pave on Crestline tomorrow. Should take a couple of days, and then what they'll do is they'll continue on, you know, in the same order that they installed the main. Basically, what they want to do is get the major road work done in those three, four streets, get things paved back, and then drop back and start installing services, which will then impact people as far as water outages. So we've got it scheduled now with Bo's crew to come in the week of the 22nd, start on Hilltop, Crestline, Fieldview, so and get that worked out. Once that's kind of done, then they'll send their bigger crews, their mainline crews, up to Heather and get started up there. But we're looking good on the schedule as far as that goes. So okay. If anybody has any questions?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Oh, okay. The only other project that I wanted to kind of touch on here was the sanitary sewer pump station 2 and 3 work. Last time we talked, we were going to have a pre-construction meeting. That happened. We held our first weekly meeting. Pump stations, it's a lot of mechanical, plumbing, electrical stuff. So there's a lot of submittal paperwork that's kind of flying back and forth. So we're still working on that. ICI did some potholing last Thursday at Pump Station 3, and that went well. Really, the actual construction on the projects will probably start in early September. We've been talking with the contractor. I think our first meeting was pretty fruitful. We had a talk about their pump around plan, because when you take a pump station offline, you have all this gravity sewer flowing to it, and yeah. Take the pumps away, you got to come up with a different plan. So we've been discussing the pump around plan. That's pretty much all I had. Any questions?
Questions? Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Not for something light.
I know you've been waiting for this.
I'm going to try to keep it short. Good evening, Council. Yori Burnett, Community Development Director. We have before you a discussion on traffic impact fees. We are not asking you to make a final decision, more seeking direction from you tonight. We don't have an ordinance prepared, but ideally we could have an ordinance ready for the first meeting in September. So traffic impact fees are a potentially lengthy discussion, and we talk about this every time, at least when we update our comprehensive plan, where traffic impact fees are an optional tool that cities can use to make up at least some of the costs, the developers' reasonable share of costs of transportation improvements over the 20-year period. So over that 20-year period, we know that there is just shy of $200 million worth of transportation projects in the Ferndale area. Of that, there's approximately $141 million worth of projects, and these include our annual sidewalk maintenance and general maintenance that we're expecting to do over the next 20 years, $141 million. Of that, approximately $68 million are eligible for inclusion in a traffic impact fee program. It's just that there are trips, there are already cars on the road. There are cars on the road that don't stop in Ferndale, and that means that absent an interlocal agreement, we can't charge for those trips that are going to the Lemmy Casino or to Sandy Point or to the refineries. We project that we can likely, of that $68 million, capture approximately $42 million or so, and this is a variable number depending on your direction. And finally, we believe that over the next 20 years, there's going to be approximately 12,500 new PM peak hour trips that come into Ferndale. Maybe they stay in Ferndale, maybe they don't. As a result of all of these factors, staff is recommending what we had recommended before, that we modify our fees, increase them to be $3,500 per PM peak hour trip in the planned action area and $3,000 in the rest of the city.
with the possibility of having a reduced fee in the downtown area. Now, council last week requested some additional review, basically saying, can we justify a $4,000 traffic impact fee within the planned action area? And the answer is yes, we can. The way that we would get there is we turn dials, right? There are some dials that we can't turn. They're just known quantities. Our project costs are what they are until we get to the point of actually designing them. The number of trips are what they are until we decide that somehow we're going to control everything and not generate those trips. But what we can turn the dial on is what projects we charge traffic impact fees against. So we can get up to $4,000 in the planned action area by beginning to charge traffic impact fees on the overpass at Main Street. An obvious question would be, well, why weren't we charging traffic impact fees for the overpass at Main Street originally? The reason for that is because this is not a project that WashDOT has yet endorsed or has yet officially acknowledged as being something that needs to happen. And as a result, since they own that structure, the city, conceivably by charging fees for it, would be charging fees for a project that doesn't yet exist and possibly for a project that might not ever exist within the 20-year period. On the other hand, how do we get WashDOT to make it a priority? One of the thoughts, and transportation consultants support this, is to say we have skin in the game, that not only are we providing some funding for the ramps themselves, but we are providing funding for a project that we aren't even responsible for. Most cities, according to Transpo, don't charge traffic impact fees against WashDOT projects. They do that probably to keep traffic impact fees low, maybe artificially low, and also to say, well, gosh, you know, this is the state's requirement or this is the state's project. So what we have is an optional traffic impact fee. You don't need to have any traffic impact fees at all. That train has probably already left the station. You can go to $4,000 and justify it. This would be $4,000, I believe, keeping it at $3,000 in the rest of the city. You can go up, and this was in the memo, to right around $6,000 per trip. That's the max if you turned all the dials to the max. I think with that said, staff and the Transpo group have done the technical analysis. I'm happy to answer any questions, but it is really your decision to make, and we're looking for a direction from you tonight.
What about the dial of, at our current rate, I'll just throw this out, at our current rate, we're only collecting 30%. What if we don't want to include the overpass and we want to collect 40%? Because we're going to have to come up with all this money and we have no idea where. Well, what keeps us at only collecting 30% as opposed to collecting 40%?
I'm going to open up the wrong Excel sheet first, but the bottom line, oh no.
It's not going to let you unless you accept.
Can I just accept?
You can just accept.
Accept your overlords and move on.
Okay. The bottom line is that we can't get to a full, we can't get to 100%.
Right.
For sure. 40%, I think that we get close with that. I think that this is the dial turned up all the way, so you might not be able to see this. So I'll read it to you. We still have the $140 million. That's a dial that can't change, right? We have the TIF eligible cost that is $116 million.
It's page 85.
It's page 85, which represents approximately 82% of those total capital costs. Okay, so that's a dial that we can turn up a little bit. We did turn it up by getting to this maximum 6,000. Of that, though, because of the trip generation, just not everyone begins or ends in the city, and therefore we can't charge it, it looks like we max out at about 62% of the traffic impact fee eligible cost. So we can get past the 40%. We can get to 62% if we turned it up as far as we possibly could. which gets us to about $6,000 in the planned action area and about $5,500 outside of the planned action area. And if we wished to get to, and I know I'm throwing a lot of numbers out, if we wish to get to the $4,000 that it seemed might have been the sweet spot for council, then what we would end up being is we get to 62% of the traffic impact fee eligible costs, which was that the same percentage? I'm going back and forth in my own head. Oh, I see. We still max out at 62%. So that's a dial that's not really changing. What's changing are the eligible costs, where depending on where we turn up the dials, we're only at 50% of the traffic impact fee eligible costs in the $4,000 option, but we're at 82% in the max option.
Okay. And so at $4,000, we'd be 50-50 with developers. They pay half, we pay half. Correct? Is that
what they still would not pay half because it's a percentage of a percentage, where they're still at 31% of the total capital costs in our $4,000 option. The reason for that is because some of our capital projects are not can't be demonstrated to be growth related. I mean, maybe we can get 20% on a certain project, but Washington might be a really good example. We're not adding another lane there. And so we're not really adding capacity, but we can argue that we're making it more efficient so we can put in like a 20%, but we can't get that to 100% of the cost.
Right.
Yeah. So each individual, if you look at the 20-year project list and look at the projects that are on there, each one has a TIF eligibility percentage that's associated with it that's taking into consideration that portion of the project that's attributable to the traffic impact fee. So there's a variable percentage with each one of the projects and then kind of an overall type of percentage that we're trying to recover from projects as well. So it gets to be kind of a percentage on top of a percentage, and it's a bit convoluted to explain.
How do you determine that percentage?
Well, so there are notes in this column AA. There's TIF eligibility. So there are some where Portalway, when it changes from portal to enterprise and it then goes over the freeway, it has a weird V split. It is an awkward intersection right now. Improving it isn't going to improve capacity. So that's a pretty clear one where it's a 0% traffic impact fee. With the other ones, once you get into the variability, yeah, 20%. And can we justify 30% there? Yeah, we probably can. It gets to the point of reasonableness where, you know, typically you can imagine that if you max it out or the higher the traffic impact fee is, the more likely that someone is going to squawk and say, oh, my gosh, you know, that's no longer reasonable. Whether or not they can actually demonstrate that or not, who knows? It's just, you know, it's common sense. If you hit that sweet spot, which is where we probably have been about over the last 5 or 6 years, as the city administrator says, it causes pain, but not so much pain where, you know, people cry out. So if we turned everything up to the max, it probably does increase the chance that someone is going to say, oh, this is too far, and which is why staff isn't recommending turning it all the way up to the max, just because we can probably defend it, but if we step back, we can also say, you know, this is reasonable.
So is it negotiable, or is there a formula that you use to determine that percentage?
It's kind of judgment. In a worst-case scenario, you get sued and you have to defend it in court. Then you have the engineer saying 40%, 60%, 80%. Everyone knows that 100%, you know, is unreasonable. So you start arguing about what is that? It's judgment. It's professional engineering judgment as to the amount of benefit. Because if I'm building a home or for that matter building a mall, I only want to pay for things that my development is causing. I shouldn't have to pay just because for 90 years, 80 years, the city, all cities, didn't charge a penny for traffic impact fees. So you have to be, the only issue is what's growth related and what's just necessary because it's a 40-year-old road and you got to rebuild it eventually.
Well, and, you know, we could look at a couple of projects on there that have currently identified deficiencies, and that current deficiency cannot be, is not eligible for the traffic impact fee. So that we may have a pre-existing deficiency that's being addressed by an improvement that adds capacity, so a portion of it is attributable to the additional capacity and a portion of it is attributable to the, you know, remediating the currently deficient condition you have on it. I know that Yori and I spent a significant amount of time discussing those, you know, figures with Transpo. Transpo is the ones that, that put those figures together, taking into consideration the, you know, the current condition of the intersection and what the improvements were anticipated to add to the system. So I think there's been quite a bit of thought that's gone into that percentage. Now, there is some fungibility within that number, and I think that you could make an argument for raising or lowering just about all of them, but they're, you know, attributable to the project.
Well, and one additional layer, and I think it's important to remember, is Portalway, which we show here, is $14.5 million or so. And we're all familiar with Portalway. We, in the $4,000 scenario, are saying traffic impact fees are going to be about 30% of the cost. Could we go higher? Probably we could. But remember that whenever a development comes in, they also have to do frontage improvements. So, and we can't double charge. So we say you do the frontage improvements, three-quarter road improvement, which basically finishes that part of the road. We must give them credits against traffic impact fees if we're charging traffic impact fees for that project. So there's a little bit of kind of thinking ahead here where if we did 100% of the project costs covered by impact fees, then in order to pay for it, we need all of Portalway to develop, because we're going to give that money right back to them as they do their frontage improvements. But at only 30%, we are still going to be able to collect some impact fees and have the and give them a little bit of a credit for it, but not 100% of their frontage improvement. So that's why, you know, we did go through each of these one by one, and some of them, gosh, we could go higher, but then it's going to impact us on the other side too.
I know you understand our frustration, and I don't necessarily want to cause developers pain, but, you know, we're talking about $140 million worth of projects, and somewhere along the way we've got to find 70% of that money. And I mean, I don't know where that's going to come from. And so I at least hope that we'll think about the $4,000 for the planned action area, because at a minimum we're going to have to do matching grants with WashDOT, if not pay for it ourselves. Because I know they said we could certainly put that roundabout in at Portalway, and we just have to pay for it. And I think that's the way it's going to be. So I'm comfortable with the higher rates because I don't know where the money's going to come from. I really don't. I don't know how we're going to do these projects in the next even 5 years.
Greg?
Yori, do you have a sense of where if we were to charge $4,000 traffic impact fee, where does that put us compared to the other cities in Whatcom County? Is it fair to make that comparison, or is that a... That's not a good comparison to make.
I don't think it is fair to make that comparison, but it would put us at the highest. The reason why I don't think that we're already the highest,
okay.
And I think that for any number of reasons, either not updating for a long period of time or making a political decision, I think as Bellingham has to keep it relatively low, there is relatively low. I don't think that it's a good comparison because each city has a different line item. Ours is $140 million. Bellingham's might be different. Bellingham might be able to fund it from sales tax. We can't at this point. The council might wish to think, okay, gosh, you know, if we had a lower one, are we more likely to get more sales tax, which could then pay for it? That's going to be, you know, a question.
Level of service as well.
Level of service as well, exactly. Yeah. We've adopted a certain level of service that's higher and a little bit more nuanced than a lot of the other jurisdictions. We're not the highest in Washington State. What, City of Sammamish is at $20,000, I believe, per trip. At some point, you do need to factor it in a little bit just as far as being competitive, because we know that we're going to hear it from the other side of the counter, and we already do. But the city has a bill of $140 million.
Well, that was going to be a follow-up. So then, do you have a sense of how that's going to impact developers? I mean, you're the one that's talking with them on a regular basis. How is this going to be received?
Any increase is going to be received negatively. I think it makes sense that it would. There are two kind of payers, or three, I guess. Let's start with residential, where we have had pretty robust residential growth even after we adopted our higher traffic impact fees in 2010. We could read into that as being a factor of Bellingham or a lot of different factors, but obviously folks are willing to pay where the developer is willing to pay because they're just passing it on, right? The future homeowner is willing to pay because they have been paying. I know that some have said, gosh, we're growing too fast. Obviously, the higher you increase your fees, the more that you're going to stop having paid at the bottom end, which is not necessarily – these aren't supposed to be a step on the gas or a brake on development, but realistically they do. So that's residential. For commercial, what we really see is our revenue projections and traffic impact fees are below, I think they were, for the year before Mark left. And then the Meadows came in, and I'll bet that they're probably at revenue projection or higher. We see commercial development and these plats come in where that's where a lot of it is paid at once. So you have a developer who is needing to write a check for if it's 100 homes, and if we were charging $3,000 and they're paying half of that, then they're writing a check for $150,000. If you are a Walmart, let's say, and if you're generating 300 trips during the PM peak hour, then you're looking at, what would that be?
900,000.
The Nordic Way project, I think, was coming in at about $2 million. So if we increase this in the planned action area, that's adding another third to it. So that's hefty.
Yeah. Brent?
I'm kind of surprised to some of you, concerned about raising the fees. It seems like this is a repeat of what we did a couple of years back, especially with the planned action. We did the study, we came up with the fee, the council came up with a number and set that as the planned action. My thing is, I haven't seen any growth in the planned action area, but yet all of a sudden now we have to bump up the fee in the planned action area. Is this kind of a thing where we didn't, as far as the staff or somebody says, we didn't get all the money we wanted to a couple of years ago when we raised the fee, so we'll come back and raise it up again to get it to what we wanted it to be in the first place a couple of years ago. That's kind of the feeling I'm getting from this, because I don't really see anything that's changed that would warrant the increase in fees other than to say, well, man, we've added some other projects, but why are we bumping up the planned action area?
Well, that's a fair question.
Other than we just didn't get as much the first time around.
That's a fair question. So we have a proposal to take it up to $3,500 in the planned action, and then another to take it up to $4,000. $3,500, moving up to $3,500 would be barely covering the actual rate of inflation over that time period. So it would need to bump up just because there has been inflation over the last 4 years since we did the planned action. So for the dollar, the 2016 dollar to have the same value as the 2012 dollar, there would need to be that increase. And it would actually stay basically the same. The $3,500 increase doesn't come close to the actual cost of doing projects, though, the construction cost index. And that's much more variable than just the rate of inflation, which tends to be, a little bit more straight. the construction cost index in Washington, because Seattle is the fastest growing metropolitan area, I believe, in the United States, they are sucking a lot of the transportation contractors and materials there. So when you look at the western states, you see like Colorado, which is kind of going up like this, you know, California that's kind of going up like this, Oregon, same thing. But Washington is skyrocketing more than any of the other western states. And probably it'll go back down at some point or get to the level. But a $3,500 increase, if we were to build these projects now, even with the increase, we would have a more difficult time doing it than if we did before.
And as far as the timing, we just redid our comp plan that had, as you all know, the large transportation element to it. So whenever you redo your comprehensive plans, it's always a good idea because you do have new numbers, new assumptions, new thoughts about what you're going to be doing in the future to eventually circle back around and look at your transportation impact. So that's why now, and Yuri just explained kind of the thought behind the dollar amount.
It's another part of the dollar amount. Transpo looked back at all of the projects, and they were able to take the projects that they've worked on all throughout Washington State and give what they feel is a more accurate estimate of not only the project cost, but the right-of-way acquisition averages and other things. So they feel that it's more exact. Now, not all the projects went up. Some of the projects actually went down. One of the big projects that's a new one is Portal. $14 million, it would be a bigger project than our Main Street projects. And that was not on there before.
Well, one of my things is to address Council Member Watson's concern about where we're going to get the money. Sales tax. We are trying to do all these projects in a city that has virtually no sales tax compared to Bellingham and things. That's why Bellingham doesn't have to charge. They have Costco. They have Walmart. They have two Fred Meyers. I mean, they're raking in the sales tax. What are we getting? Samuels? You know, basically. Wilson's. But compared to them, we're sales tax poor. And to me, looking at raising rates in the planned action area where we're trying to attract retail to come into, are those retailers going to come? We've been hearing about the big box coming off of Nordic. I haven't seen, to me, Sauter Lumber is still functioning. I haven't seen them shut down yet. And that's supposedly where the big box is going to go. Other, you know, on the east side of the freeway, what, 60-some acres we have over there that was supposed to be developed years ago. It hasn't. This thing is still for sale. You know, we need that sales tax, but are we going to shoot ourselves in the foot by raising these fees to where it's not attractive for these people to come into the city and, you know, develop? And that's what I'm, you know, concerned with. You know, it's simple to say we'll raise the fees because we need the money to do the road projects, but then is that going to keep the retailers from continuing to come, you know, even look at coming here, and therefore we're going to stay with all our sales tax money going to Bellingham and nothing coming here?
Kathy? I can see, I understand people are afraid we're going to scare the developers away. I guess I'm more afraid the developers are going to come and we're not going to have the money to do the road work. And, you know, yes, big box stores will bring a certain amount of sales tax with them, but what is the break even? I mean, if we spend $4, $5, $6 million fixing the roads and maybe you're getting $500,000 a year in sales tax, what is the break-even point? How many years do we have to wait before we just start to break even from that store? You know, if a big box store is going to come, I do think they should have to pay the fees to help fix the road that their presence is going to break. And, yes, we will get some in sales tax, but we looked at the original big box store that was talking, maybe bring in $500,000 a year, but we were going to spend $4 million on road improvements. Think of how many years it would be before we break even. I'm just really worried we are not going to have enough money. You know, for the houses, they just pass it on to the people who buy the houses. If you raise it $200, they charge the people who buy the house an extra $200. I'm really uncomfortable with the planned action area, only because it's so expensive and Seattle is sucking up all the money from WSDOT. I mean, I don't know that we're going to get WSDOT help. And what are we going to do with that interchange? I mean, what do we do if we really do start to pop at exit 262 and suddenly we get a $10 million bill? I don't know how we're going to do it with the wastewater treatment plant and everything else we've got ahead of us.
Don't we still have a sales tax rebate in place too?
Yes, they'll have to get back half their traffic impact fees. We give them back half their traffic impact fees.
And that's an incentive.
Yes, that's what majority of council chose to do.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to dive it. Conceptually, what it is that it has to be a certain size, so not everyone qualifies. And if they do qualify, it's a scale of anywhere from 10%, and it tops out at 50%. And the way it works is in the first 3 years, we collect all the sales tax and figure out what bracket they hit for a rebate. And the second 3 years, we rebate 10% upwards to 50%. The theory being is that the sales, and it has to do with the has to do with how many sales and therefore how much sales tax. So it's really kind of been designed, and other cities have done this. We kind of copied it from others. It's designed to incentivize those large retailers that generate significant sales tax dollars.
Well, that kind of what my point was being. We really can't count on all of that when we're turning around and giving back a significant portion, 10 to 50%.
Right. The thought is that once they come here, then you're talking 5, 10, 15, 20 years. I mean, it's the long run. Eventually the lines do cross and you end up literally making money on it. But it's not that it's pulled many folks in already. So just like our high fees hasn't seemed to diminish the appetite for home building. So it's kind of subjective whether these incentives are truly incentives or whether they're capital I incentives or small I incentives, or there's probably, I'm sure there's probably books and theses written on the effect of development on impact fees. I know that many times I've heard that impact fees are a minor part of it. Land costs is a big thing. And more than anything else, it's the market. You're not going to build a home or a store if you don't have the customers. So it's market-driven. Our land is a little bit cheaper. It costs just as much to build here as it does in Bellingham when it comes to a 2x4 or a bag of cement. So a lot of times the delta is the market. If the market's there, then they'll build the homes, and if there's enough homes, they build the stores for people to shop in.
You also mentioned something about when they do, you were speaking about Portal, they do three-quarter streets. Then you have to rebate them back for what? Now, how do we determine that? Because they're building at a non-union rate, and we're charging, if we had to do it, it would be at Davis-Bacon union rate.
And the Public Works Director can chime in, too. There are two different methods of frontage improvements. One of them, the in-lieu fee, that we talk about, where they basically give us an engineer's estimate, we hold their money, and then we pull everybody's money together and put that into a capital project. In a situation like that, which is not our preferred situation, I believe that what we would do is we'd say, okay, here's 100% of their engineer's estimate, and we'll credit you back 30% of that, might be, you know, one way. The other one is them actually doing the improvements, and there I would assume it's probably similar to latecomers, where they would give us their total billing and we would credit them 30% based on that, depending on what the percentage was.
Yeah, in almost all cases, the traffic impact fees are greater than the frontage improvements, so what they end up doing is getting a percentage of their traffic impact fees back. It's what Yuri said, mentioned. We can't charge them to both build a sidewalk in front of their...
If they're building it at a non-union, we're certainly not crediting them at union rates for construction costs.
I think we would be based on actual cost or their actual engineer's estimate.
Yeah, it would be the engineer's estimate for their project.
And our engineers look at their engineer's estimates, there is, I think, a reasonableness.
So what are you looking for, anything?
You had a break.
All I was going to say is based on what Yori said about the big box retailer paying about $900,000 traffic impact fees, with the increase would be $112,000 for a major retailer. That's a day's revenue. I mean, it's increasing from, if we were to go to 4,000 instead of 3,500, it's a negligible amount ultimately.
For them.
You're right, but it could be pretty meaningful for us.
So I'm hearing that the max, given the dials, is about 6,000 in the planned action. And so right now we're at 3 in the planned action. So that's kind of the bookends of
right.
Right now we're at 3,000.
And we're talking about going to 3,500.
Exactly. We're talking 3,500, maybe 4, but it seems like the top end, a reasonable top end, would be 6,000.
Didn't Transpo have, like, it was like 4,500 or something in 2012? I mean, if you go back and look at the 2012 numbers, it was much higher than it is now.
Correct. So what we would like from you is to be able to put us in a position where at our September meeting, we don't necessarily need to rehash all of this, where if we can have an ordinance that, while it is fairly simple to just replace, you know, 8 numbers, if we had an idea if the council majority is kind of leaning towards, what end of the spectrum are you leaning towards? Are we looking at the higher max end? Are we looking at the staff recommendation? Are we looking at the 4,000/3,000?
Or you may enjoy this. We can bring back the ordinance with 3 numbers in each
just
slot.
Just like 2012, what we're just doing.
At some point, you know, they got to have, you know, so many people say yes and so many people say no. There's no absolute right answer, as you're hearing, because there's all these factors. So it's whatever you're comfortable with, and it's probably going to be 7 comfort levels.
We didn't talk about downtown either, because 3,000 citywide would be a change for downtown.
The
which I'm
lower
I'm comfortable with.
Fees have been just as successful as our other incentive program.
Yeah, we've lowered all the fees to 0. Not all of them, but all the development fees of in downtown. And again, you know, we know how much.
How many people show up and say, "This is what I've been waiting for," and I'll be seeing you soon.
They'll probably be next week. Check on that.
So I don't go with that argument anymore. Enough of that. Mm-hmm. So I'm comfortable with the 4,000. So I don't know. But I imagine we're probably gonna.
Well, why don't we bring back 4,000? And if you want to bid it up, bid it down again, that'll be your thing to do. I don't want to put you in an uncomfortable position of not having.
I want 3,978.
That's right. So we'll bring back some numbers, and then you can. Do you feel like you have enough information for this decision? I guess that's maybe a more important aspect of it. Is there anything else you would like us?
It's also esoteric anyway. No offense, but
no, it is.
Oh, it is.
Rebecca has.
How often can we change it?
Every day, if we want.
We could.
So if we leave it as it is for now, and then some development rolls in, we can reevaluate that.
Right. Just realizing, you know, when they come in, they're vested to the number at the time. So yeah. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
That was fun.
Okay, let's do that again.
Who's going to do this one? It isn't me.
I believe it's Councilmember Watson.
Yes, I got volunteered in doing this. Voluntold. All right. As you know, this, I don't know if you read the consent agenda, but the one we approved last time we rescinded because we couldn't do that. It was illegal. And what has changed now is we're going to have a public event, which would be entertainment. The public can come, and it would basically be a way for our Japanese sister city to see some of our music and art, that sort of thing. But it will be open to the public. There'll be light snacks, and they're asking for, staff is thinking $1,000 max, and the Arts Commission will also be helping as well with this event. We had originally planned to sponsor this as a kind of an art and cultural event, and we were going to invite the sister city people to come. So we'll be using our LTAC money along with this, so it won't just be city funds, it'll be our Arts Commission LTAC money as well. $800, how much do we figure we had left?
About $800.
About $800.
And there was an article, I believe our clerk found this, it was extremely timely. It just kind of popped up. Well, August 10th is the date on it, so it's a fairly timely article about these celebrations. So it's certainly something that has been...
I also got in touch with the auditor last week.
Oh, good. Thank you.
And heard back from her today. And she says, under the ceremonies and celebrations section, having a sister city is typically recognized as a municipal function and generally serves a public purpose. Therefore, if the event is open to the public, declared by the council as having a public benefit matching to the city's policy, and all costs are reasonable and properly approved, then we would have no concerns with it.
And this won't be used for any gifts. It's all for the public event. And so it'll be to pay for the entertainment and for the food, but anybody in Whatcom County will be able to attend. That's why we're going to be using the LTAC money, because we're also going to be hoping that people from Bellingham will come as well. But no gifts. This is all for the public, which is what makes it legal.
Will we have full accounting, penny for penny?
Yes, we will, actually. And that's one thing I do want to make sure we do, because I think with Star Park, council had a hard time with Star Park because so much happened in the last week or two, and suddenly there was $100 here and $200, and it just got very confusing. So I know we have a budget from the Arts Commission, and we also need a budget from staff. And Susan and I will make sure you get the Arts Commission budget, just so we know, and it's laid out. And we need to have it laid out by mid-September meeting so that, you know, that finance committee can see this is exactly how the money is going to be spent. Because I don't know that we actually need a full $1,000, depending on... It's a Thursday, October 27th, so I don't know if we're going to get 100 people to come down and listen to music and meet some people from Japan. I just don't know whether how much money we should even spend. That's something that you could help with from a hospitality viewpoint. How do you even... how do you make a wag like that?
I'll
you work on that.
Thought.
Right. So I would move to approve the resolution as presented to spend $1,000 for the Sister City Hospitality event.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor, aye.
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 All opposed, nay.
Howard Cable.
We're having agenda change. We're adding an item F1 because what I said wasn't adhered to. So I was prepared to do something else, but since I'm sitting in this chair tonight, we're going to do it this way.
It's good to be the king.
Pardon me?
It's good to be the king.
Well, this is actually showing that I'm not the king.
Yes.
2 weeks ago, I was called to please come to City Hall, and the mayor had a job for me, so I couldn't wait to hear that that was, so I came, and it wasn't a job. It was the jail task force. Everybody was here when I complained about we had no representation for one vote for all the cities, and so the county council changed it to, and this is according to what I was told by George, the county council said, we'll give you another person. You can select a council member from one of the small cities. And so at the next meeting, the mayor of Linden and the mayor of Ferndale showed up. And the county council was not pleased and said, we said a mayor and a council person. So I was asked if I would be interested, since I brought it up and have knowledge of this sort of thing, would I be interested? And I said yes. I said, but it will be brought to the council, to the all of us as council members. If somebody else wants it, they can feel free to volunteer. And then we decide which one of us is going to, and then he can prove that that didn't happen. So with that being said, is there anybody that would like to go on the jail task force?
Oh, hell no. I got a job for you.
Everyone take one step back. No, think about it.
No, I'm good.
Okay. Well, I'll volunteer. So is everybody okay with that?
Well, why don't we make it official?
Why don't we? Yes.
Yeah. And I move to appoint Councilmember Olson to the jail task force.
Okay. A motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Better you than us.
I thought about it.
People kept asking me, why do we not have representation from Ferndale when they're building the jail in Ferndale, possibly?
Yeah.
Well, now we do, and they're going to be sorry. Mess with us.
I'm not sure they're going to like it, but that's
speak truth to power, bro.
Mayor's reports? I have none. Yori?
None.
Evan? City administrator?
Thursday, finance director interviews. Mm-hmm. A few of you are helping out. I appreciate it. So it should be.
Are there going to be sandwiches and steaks and lobster again?
Mm-hmm. At least one of those.
Oh.
Probably the sandwich part.
Riley?
Susan? I do have just for council's information next. Committee's agenda for the August 31st committee's meeting. You'll be receiving your committee agenda packet on Monday the 29th instead of Friday the 26th because I will be in Disneyland next week.
Yay! Have fun.
Right.
You forgot council reports.
Oh. Well, we're still. I screwed that up. Okay. Council reports.
I have another item that came up at the fire district meeting that was a surprise to me, and I had no idea how to answer it. We were talking about the sewer plant and water, and one of the fire commissioners came up to me and said, or stated at the meeting, he goes, "Do you know that your administrator, Greg Young, has reopened negotiations with the PUD to purchase water from them, and that again, and because our wells can't handle the future capacity of the needs of the city, so he's looking at seeing if we can get water again from the PUD and at what cost and things, and just starting the negotiation process." And I go, "I had never heard of that happening," and so it was kind of a concern for me for two reasons. One is if are our wells in that type of a situation where we need to look at, you know, getting additional water supply. And two is starting a negotiation without coming to council or stating anything of those concerns to council.
Outrageous. Yeah. No, we're not starting any negotiations by any means. Right now the PUD is considering a project that they're actually talking about perhaps going after EDI funding, the county funding. The PUD operates the a water system in some way, up in the Grandview area. They have a dual system. They have a potable system, and then they have a non-potable fire flow system. And they've had some issues over the years because their fire flow system relies on a pond that they pump out of, something that probably would not be able to be permitted today. So they've had some issues over the years on the amount of flow that they could supply to Grandview. And that's probably been one of the reasons why there's not been more significant recent development up in Grandview because of water and probably because of that also sewer. So right now the PUD is talking about running a brand new line off of their river water up to Grandview to better serve their existing customers up there. And I've talked one time I was sitting next to Steve Jilk, and I go, you know, thinking in the future, you know, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, we hope the city, we actually have an agreement with the PUD that we inked many years ago under which the city would take over the PUD system up there. It requires some very large investments, mostly because the pipes they have in the ground for the potable system aren't anywhere near what a real municipal water system would require, and their fire flow system is again, it's a pump sticking in a pond. So they're thinking long-term, the PUD is, about how they can, in the intermediate period, improve their fire flow up there and improve their system. And they actually came to us and asked if we would be supportive of the EDI application. So that got us thinking about the future. And I told Steve Jilk that I could see a situation in the future when Church Road or Thornton Road is not the north end of the city, but it actually is the middle of the city, and we have homes and businesses all the way up to Grandview. And at that point in time, I was asking Steve, conceptually, it might make sense for the city long-term to serve the north end of the city where we don't have any water pipes or any wells with a modified PUD origin water source while we serve the rest of the city with our current and expanded in the future well system. So it was more of a just a brief conversation about the conceptually what 50 years, 100 years might look like for the city of Ferndale. We've had no conversations with them about negotiating returning to the PUD, except for the possibility of serving the north half, if you will, of the city when you look at the land mass.
Did you have your hand up?
Yeah.
Oh.
Just
go
first.
I was just going to say, Philip, 66 Community Leaders Breakfast is Wednesday at the Ferndale Police Department at 7:30 so people can listen to Chief Matt. It has 50 years of experience as a police officer.
Nice.
And all I was going to say is coming up a couple weekends, August 26th, 27th, Ferndale Street Fair, lots of opportunities to volunteer to help. And if you don't want to help, at least show up and have some fun. And hope to see you there.
Well, that's it. I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.